This episode of TWIP is brought to you by our friends at WPPI. Get your free $30 expo pass at wppiexpo.com/TWIP. In this episode of This Week in Photo, it's all about the psychology of photography. This is TWIP. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today in the show, we're going to be talking about psychology, specifically the psychology of photography and how you can get out of your head and use that sort of superpower of not being stuck in your head and worrying about perceptions and treating people correctly to actually treat them correctly and create awesome images. And to do that, I have two of my friends on the show. I've got Mr. Troy Miller and Peter Levshin, both of whom are TWIP Pro members. Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, good.
It's good to have you on. You know, this is going to be a good show, Peter, despite that the white earbud that you have hanging in your...
I promise I'll do better next time. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So that's the idea of how this show is going to go, because we are all friends, and a lot of the stuff that we joke about with each other, we can't even say on the live stream.
But
we're going to try to keep it less sophomoric and more adult. Before we get started, Peter Levshin, tell us a little bit about you, man. Like, what's your pedigree in photography? I detect a little bit of a Brooklyn accent in there. Where are you from?
Yep. From the south side of Brooklyn, right next to New Zealand, probably Australia. Anyway.
Recently
got my master's degree, PPA. Love doing travel photography, travel around the world. Love meeting people, love going to exotic places and, basically taking photos of things that people haven't seen before and interacting with just different people just around the world. And Troy and I have been friends for a long time, and that'll probably end tonight because he's just treating me badly. Anyway, I've learned to take much better photos and being in image competitions and so on. But there is some really good rules and tips that I'd love to share with all the people tuning in about my experiences with traveling and maybe, you know, people can learn and get something out of it. Love to share.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's good. And just as a reminder, and I'll put links to this in the description for this episode and also in the blog post for the show. But Peter, you've been on This Week in Photo, and we did a kind of an in-depth discussion about your travels to Papua New Guinea and some of the pluses and minuses and adventures that you had on that trip. So if people want to dive deeper into the world of Peter Levshin, you can do it right there. Also on the show, Mr. Troy Miller. Troy is here. You are no stranger to This Week in Photo, man. You're here all the time with our critiques. But now you're here as a guest on the main show. How'd that happen? Who do you know?
I don't know. Somebody must have dropped off and you needed the filler.
There you go. Someone must have dropped off. See, understudies. It's awesome. I love it. Well, for the folks that may not have seen the critiques or are not active in the TWIP Pro community, tell us a little bit about Troy Miller, what you're up to.
I'm a full-time wedding photographer. I think this year I hit 27 years. So my wife and I do it full-time together. So we are saturated in the wedding industry. I also love to do fine art, blow things up, light things on fire, and try to photograph them. And I also enjoy educating. So like Peter over there, you know, he's one of my prodigal children, you know, trying to keep him growing. And I'm always looking for something creative to do. So I like to consider myself a creative, and photography is my outlet.
Love it. Well, welcome to both of you guys. It's good to have you both on. Before we dive into the topic du jour of this episode, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor for this episode of This Week in Photo. This episode of TWIP is brought to you by WPPI. WPPI combines educational seminars with a major industry trade show and networking events, all designed around learning the latest techniques, building new relationships, and growing a business in a friendly, fun environment, all at one time and in one place. You can learn superior technical skills and new shooting styles. You can build new relationships to grow your business. You can experience new products, photo gear, and solutions from major manufacturers. You can discover competitive and affordable ways to grow your business. And you can meet some of the world's finest photographic instructors. Make an investment in yourself and in your future. You can register now to get a free expo pass. That's a $30 value. Just head over to wppiexpo.com/twip. That's wppiexpo.com/twip. And we thank WPPI for their sponsorship of This Week in Photo. All right, guys, that's that. Let's dive into this show. So basically what I want to do is have a conversation and, you know, sort of give some advice, some practical advice for photographers. And I want to break the ice with getting that practical advice by just, Peter, I'm going to dive in with you first and talk about, you know, the scariest thing for a lot of photographers, scary so much so that they won't even do it, is leaving the country with their camera. You know, and most people, I would argue, that do it, you know, kind of regress, but they'll just shoot landscapes. That way you don't have to interact with other humans. But yeah. You don't do that. You shoot landscapes as well, but you also photograph people in new and exciting places. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Describe what that draw is and why you feel like you want to take photos of people versus just kind of getting environmental street photography type shots.
Right. Okay, so a little bit of background. I've been traveling probably 40 years doing travel photography. I've been arrested 5 times. I've been shot at once. I've been held up with a knife, chased with a knife, a bunch of things. But that's a tiny, tiny percentage. And it was due to inexperience and lack of a knowledge of a destination that I'm going to. And in this day and age now, doing research on where you're going and hooking up with a good travel guide or a local guide or a local photographer is the key. And you can take magnificent, I love doing landscape photography, but you could take pictures up in Sonoma Valley and it could be in France, it could be Italy, it could be Australia. So what I like to do is I like to take pictures basically of the locals and how they dress, how they act, and how to interact with them and try and have a good time with them, have fun with them, and enjoy the fact that most of the places I go to, they have basically nothing. They have no money, no electricity, most of the places, no, you know, hard getting running water, but yet they're happy and they're having a good time. So I want to document that and show people that there are other people on the planet and what they look like and how they interact. And nothing would make me happier that if somebody looked at, you know, one of my photos and got, you know, basically a good feeling from that and maybe wanted to go and travel and meet some of those people.
Yeah. That sounds easy when you say it, but then if you do that, so we've done other shows on travel and how to get over the travel block and, you know, book a ticket, get out there, get the guide and all that. But once you're there, Peter, once you're there, let's, you know, take any, you know, you're in India, you're in New Guinea or Papua New Guinea, and you want to do portraits. You've done portraits of people on the ground that don't speak your language at all. They yep. have very few cultural similarities with you, and yep. you're showing up in their village with, you know, I would say probably more than a year or two or three of their annual incomes in camera gear. How do you reconcile that and make sure that you're being respectful of them while still yeah. getting the photo?
Yeah. You know, that is a great question. Great question. And it comes, you know, through my mind quite a lot because, you know, especially going to Papua, into Papua West Side, you know, we turn up there and all of a sudden, all you want to do is start taking photos because you're seeing things that you've never seen before. And it's completely crazy, wild, and you just want to start taking photos. So what we do is we typically start hanging out. We don't take any camera equipment out. What we do is we either have, you know, a little smoke with the guys, a cup of tea, drink with them, start to banter a little bit, make them feel comfortable. And we always have translators. In Papua, we needed 3 different translators from English to Indonesian to Papua. And the thing is, if you have a sense of humor and treat these people with respect, and basically if they're uncomfortable with anything, then you don't do it. And, you know, after a while, we turn out to be best friends because they're following you around. They want me to take photos of this, climbing up a tree, do this and that. I got a picture of one guy throwing a spear at his wife. It was unbelievable. I mean, I'm looking at it, I'm going, he's going to kill her, and he missed, but they're really good at what they do. But you're absolutely correct. You need someone that can translate the language, and you need to make them feel comfortable that you're just not there, you know, to take photos and screw them out of it and give them nothing. I always take little trinkets. I take survival equipment. I take first aid kits. I take, you know, books and pencils and little dolls for the kids. I took candy on this last trip to, you know, Papua. And the mistake I made was I started giving the candy to the kids and they're starting to eat it. And they ended up having blue in their faces and started spitting it out. It was a nightmare. But the bottom line is you've got to act cool and you've got to be nice and you've got to be respectful. If you're respectful to the people that you take and work and if they taking their photos and if they say no for whatever reason, you know, don't give them a rash and don't make it look like, you know, just because you're going to give them a donation at the end or something that, you know, that they're to be your beck and call. And typically I would have as a luxury maybe 3 minutes to take a shot and then move on.
Yeah, yeah. In part, Peter, part of the thing that I think concerns a lot of photographers that have been out of the country or out of their home country a lot and they're visiting places that they're not necessarily familiar with the cultural norms of that particular location is just inadvertently offending people or even breaking laws. Like, for example, when I was in the military and I got stationed in Japan, I remember one of the things they told me, and I don't know if this was true or if it's still true or whatever, but they said, you know, Americans tend to cross our legs so that the bottom of our feet is out,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's considered offensive in some cultures. You know, yeah. Just kind of put yeah. the bottom of your feet facing someone yeah. else. I didn't yeah. know, and I was doing it until someone told me about that. Yeah. Traveling to other cultures, like where you go, I'd be worried about offending people. You know, just like a whole list of things that you shouldn't do. Don't walk on this side of the road. Don't do that. Yeah. Don't say this. Yeah. Don't cross your legs like this. How do you reconcile yeah. that so that you're comfortable enough to get the photo yeah. and you're not obsessing about just sort of breaking cultural yeah. norms or laws?
Yeah. Well, you know, what I do is, look, since the internet is now so good showing you all their different cultures and different histories and different people, you could look it up. You can see blogs that people have written. And if you're going to make a mistake, what you do is you try to minimize it, turn it into a bit of a joke and say, I'm sorry, then move on. I mean, I was chased in Hong Kong. I was taking photos on the street and a guy with a cleaver started chasing me and I'm running down the road and I'm not like an athlete and I've got 50 pounds of camera gear. And when I got back and I looked at it, he was cutting up a dog, which is completely illegal in Hong Kong. So you've just got to be careful and you just got to keep your wits about you. But you've got to look, you know, forget it. You just go and do it. The next time you go back, you're better at it.
Yeah.
So, you know, even going to Vietnam, you've been to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. We bombed the hell out of Vietnam. Okay. And you go there, they're so friendly. The people are nice. They're loving, they're warm, and they don't mind you taking their photo. They'll feed you and just treat you really well. Yeah. And if you make a mistake, you just, you know, say you're sorry, move on, give them a hug. And a little kiss on the cheek or something, and away you go.
Yeah. I know. When I went to Vietnam, I mean, you know, again, being ex-military, I get there, and before I got there, I had all these sort of preconceived notions, you know, based largely driven by what I'd seen on TV and old movies yeah. and all this stuff. And I knew it was a communist country, and like you said, we'd been to war. So I went there expecting hostility and, you know, people giving me the side eye and all this stuff. Got none of that. None of it at all. In fact, I was treated, and I tell people this all the time, I was treated better in Vietnam than I am here in the United States. So I'm serious about that.
Yeah.
So Troy Miller, man, let's flip this script a little bit. So you're, like I said, in beautiful, sunny, utopian Southern California. While Peter is out, you know, out in the wild there taking photos, you're not to diminish what you're doing, but you have a different kind of psychology that you need to deal with when you're dealing with your customers and brides. Peter's dealing with people where Peter's kind of the anomaly. He's like, oh, yeah, look at this guy. He showed up with a camera, you know. So Peter's a curiosity. You show up, you're being paid very well to document arguably the most important day of someone's life, which is probably the most stressful day of their life. And you got to walk away with goods that you can, you know, pay your mortgage with, you know? So how do you reconcile that? I mean, how do you deal with that and keep a level head when you're dealing with, you know, brides that may be pulling their hair out? What's the secret to that?
You know, it's kindness and humor really go a long way. But, you know, where Peter is going in, they have no expectation from him. You know, he's going in as a stranger and he's trying to create these images. So there's a social aspect there that he has to overcome. My brides have hired me and they want me to photograph them. I mean, like they can't wait for me to point the camera at them. So it's a little bit different starter. I just need to get them to relax. Yeah. And for me, that is, you know, being fun, being candid. Every pose that I have them do, I do myself. You know, I walk hands on your hips and I want you to turn your head like this. And I play with them a lot. I tease the girls a lot. We run around and that relaxes them, you know. And I tell them, I'm like, look, I'm not going to take a picture I don't like of you. So you're going to look amazing. And once they relax, then I can read their personalities and I can play with them.
Yeah.
I think that like in engagement sessions and family sessions and things like that, by the wedding day, they've already met me though. So I've already done their engagement session. But it goes in three phases. The first phase when I meet somebody is like, they don't really know Troy. They don't know how crazy he is. They don't know that I'm going to have them standing on picnic tables and tree limbs and stuff. So in the beginning, it's calm. It's simple things. In the middle, like the middle 15 minutes or whatever, I'm getting a little bit better. They're kissing. They're walking. They're having a good time. But by the end, they already know that you know, Troy's fun. We're going to do this. And I can, hey, you need to stand up on that table over there. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it in the beginning, but they do it at the end because it's that relationship, just like what Peter said. It's that trust. It's that fun. They know I'm not going to embarrass them. And then you can get anything. And during all that, you have to watch them. You have to watch them because then people will reveal themselves to you once they get comfortable. Little smiles, little looks at each other, things like that. And then you hone in on that. And that becomes the best of the images that you're going to make that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other side of the coin there that I want to hear about from you, Troy, is this goes to the idea of being competent and a professional photographer, so much so that operating your camera is muscle memory. You know what lens is going to do what, so you're not the guy that's like, okay, hold on one second, you know, I know you're pulling the garter off, but hold on, I gotta get this. Oh wait, can you do that one more time? I had it set, you know. So you got to have a certain level of comfort with your gear and be professional. Can you talk to that a little bit? Because you may overlook that, Troy, because you've been doing this for a long, long time. You've shot hundreds of weddings already, but for the people that have not done that yet, and they may know how to make a great shot, but in the theater of war, as it were, when you're shooting this wedding, you forget, like your camera just becomes this foreign object that you're carrying that's against you. How do you, you know, what advice would you give to photographers that are going to be in that situation?
I would say take your camera to bed. Carry it with you everywhere. And I'm not even kidding. You know, I mean, literally, you carry that thing with you everywhere in the dark. You know, go, it seems silly, right? But go into a room, turn the lights down really, really low, and reach in your bag and put on the 50 millimeter without being able to see. I oftentimes will be shooting, and while I'm turning around to go to my bag to change lenses, I'm still giving posing directions because I know as I'm changing the lens, I'm like, all right, put your weight on your right leg, turn slightly to your right, you know, turn your shoulder to the left, and I want your left toe pointing at me while I'm at my bag putting on a strobe. Because it is muscle memory, and the only way you're going to learn that is hands on your gear. Oh, just hours and hours and hours and hours and hours.
Yeah,
you just got it. Yeah, you gotta really learn your gear.
Peter, does that translate to your world as well when you're traveling around? You know, you just gotta have that muscle memory.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I did this a couple of times, but not lately. But never buy a piece of equipment 3 days before you leave and take the manual with you and think you're going to read it on the plane and work out how to use it. Don't do that because it'll screw you.
Yeah.
When you're talking about Troy there. I did a wedding with Troy last year and it was 12 hours And it was the most stressful, hard job I've ever done. And I would take standing in Papua with natives in spears up to my ankles in pig poo and having people threaten me and make me bleed than do another wedding in my life. I mean, it was the most stressful, the most stressful. So my hats are off to Troy, but he's absolutely correct. You have to understand your gear, understand what's happening, because I've had it happen more than once on a long flight. The vibration on planes is really horrendous. And screws come out, things get loosened, and dials change. So then when you get into a destination, then all of a sudden the camera's not set the way you want it, and you're struggling because you can't remember because you've got fatigue and you're suffering jet lag, whatever. You need to know how your equipment works, and so you can respond and take the pictures. And there's nothing worse than seeing something and going, wow, if I knew how to use my 85-1.4, I could probably take that photo. And,
yeah, but the scary thing is, like, both of you guys are competent photographers, right? And excellent photographers. You know what you're doing. Like, if we drop you behind enemy lines in your genre, you're going to come back with excellence. But what if we swap it, right? So if we like Peter, you're talking about, if we drop you in a celebrity wedding in Hollywood and you have to shoot it and come away with amazing images, and Troy, we drop you somewhere in the backwoods of some country you haven't been to before, and you need to find the village and do a picture story of a family in that village. Could you do it? Troy, take it first.
Yeah.
Could you do it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I could totally do it. Would I get the best images I could get? You know, maybe not. I mean,
you stage a wedding. You stage a mock wedding in that village, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know, the gear has to get out of your way. And that goes for all gear. That goes for your software, that goes for your camera, that goes for everything. It has to just work. You know, you don't think about your shoes. They just work for you, right? And your gear has to be like that. So, yeah, I mean, if you put me into a situation I'm not comfortable with, like photographing a concert for the first time, I was overwhelmed. But when I grabbed my camera, it was right, because I don't have to think about it. You know, I want to get a tight shot of this guy. So, and I want to shallow dip the field. My brain just makes adjustments. Yeah. When I'm teaching wedding classes or classes, I have a hard time actually explaining what I'm doing, because I'm thinking it and doing it, as opposed to like, oh no, wait, this is, I'm, you know, underexposed by one stop and over, it's harder to explain. So yeah. And I know Peter could do it, 'cause he did it at the wedding he was with me.
I mean, both of us, you could drop us anywhere to take photos. Okay. At any place, any time, any conditions. Will they be great photos? Hopefully they would be pretty good. But the bottom line is, if you understand and know how to use your gear, that's it. Okay. Are we comfortable? Troy's comfortable doing weddings because you've been doing it for 27 years. Travel photography, I'm comfortable. You could drop me anywhere and I could, you know, get a lot of travel stuff. Out of my comfort zone, taking different pictures? Yeah, sure. It's a lot of, you know, fun to test yourself. But once you have the basics of understanding how your camera works and what you want to do, you can drop us off anywhere. And we may never talk to you again after you do it to us, but, you know.
I want you coming after me after you get back to the main.
Exactly. You know. If you drop me at a wedding in Hollywood, it'd be on the 9 o'clock news, you know?
Yeah.
Something bad.
Well, Peter, I want to continue with you and talk a little bit about and dive into the language barrier side of things again. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you overcome that? If you're in an area and you want to get a shot and there's no language compatibility between what you speak and what your intended subject speaks, how do you get the shot?
Well, what you do is you smile, look at the person, you hold the camera up, shake your head, nod your head up and down. And if they, you know, give you the finger or spit at you or throw something at you, it's probably doesn't want you to, you know, take their photo. Most of the time they will nod their head, and 99% of the time they don't want any money, but, you know, you can buy them a drink or buy them a little piece of food or some fruit, whatever. Google's got that great. There's a whole bunch of devices now that do translations, and they work extremely well. I mean, you know, you say something into it, you've got to be connected, I think, through Google Chrome or whatever it is, and it works really well. You know, basically, you just got to show good common sense. Then you also have to be able to read you know, the cues that you're getting from the person that you want to photograph. You cannot be brain dead and look at them and go, hey, yeah, man, he's standing there. He's all dressed up. He wants to take my photo. And all of a sudden the guy is scowling at you. And all of a sudden, you know, he's getting very cranky and you're still doing the same thing. And the same thing applies to Troy. He has to get inside the head of the models, the parents, the kids, all of that. Okay, and deal with it for a long time. I deal with it maybe for 5, 10, 15 minutes, then I move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very, very different. But you have to be very, very cognizant of your surroundings. Know what's going on. Make sure you're not in any dangerous situation. And make sure that if you do screw it up and you put your foot in it, that you have a little exit, you back out, you make a joke, you laugh and whatever, and then you leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Detroit, Peter makes a good point. But how does that translate over to what you're doing, the whole language barrier and overcoming the language barrier thing? Like, have you ever sat at a wedding where you did not speak the language of your bride and groom?
Oh, yeah.
And how do you navigate that? What's the solution?
You know, I did a couple weddings where the couples were deaf. And I got to tell you, I was terrified. I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this, right? And I had an interpreter, which was great. But 90% of the time, the interpreter didn't have to do anything because, you know, expression and movement communicate a lot. So, you know, if you're aggressive with somebody by your body movements or you're pointing or you're scowling at them, that's going to communicate something different. So for me, the language barrier was I couldn't speak to them. I had to do everything via mime, basically. And it was absolutely one of the most amazing experiences I ever had because they were so attentive. We had an amazing time. I would point and they would walk with me. I would show them how to pose. And they, it would just, I don't think language mattered. I really don't. I think that when you can read people and you're respectful with those people, it's universal. It really is. And a smile goes a long way. And my wife, Margie, will remind me all the time, like, you know, you need a smile. Because I'm standing in the back of the room, like,
scowling at people.
You know, well, I'm looking, you know, I'm hunting for the next shot. I'm like, okay, there's the bride, there's the mom over there. What are they going to do? I got to make sure I'm ready. Oh, I'm going to grab that 70 to 200. And then Margie's like, you need to smile a little bit. You know, I'm on point. But when I'm in front of them, it's that cadence and it's that body language. And I think you can overcome any communication. I've never been to a foreign country though. So
knowing Peter for this long, you've never been to a foreign country.
Okay. No, he's tried.
I've begged him. I have begged him and begged him to come with me. I will even buy him a business class seat, the whole deal, begged him to come. And I'm just what can I say?
I went to Hawaii. Does that count?
No.
No, Hawaii doesn't count. Hawaii's in America. What's the matter with you?
No, it doesn't count. I could go there. That's a whole nother show, man.
Naked headhunters with little things on there. I mean, come on.
I know. Troy Miller and his uncomfortable comfortableness with Southern California. Or just with, yeah. No, you've gone as far as Nevada, right? So you know, you've left California. So
oh yeah. No. I going outside the US really hasn't happened for me. So, you know, not yeah, a big will, fan of
that's my job. My job is to get you out of the country before you're too old and decrepit.
Yeah, like before you don't care and you can't appreciate it.
Well, exactly.
You know, Peter, I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about horror stories. And, you know, and I know you
and
have
the reasons
some.
I don't want to leave. This is it.
Exactly. The reasons why Troy likes to stay in his cocoon down there. What? Give me some of your worst horror stories, you know, that you've experienced traveling the world and taking photos.
Yeah, okay. So while Troy's listening, I have no horror stories whatsoever.
Okay, he's not listening now. I'm muted.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm muted. No, just horror stories, car crash, car rolls over, equipment gets damaged, you get out, you're just cut in a couple of places, but nothing serious.
About the bullets flying in that temple that you were in.
Yeah, well, this was in Cambodia, northern Cambodia. My tour guide, great photographer, McDermott, fantastic, took me to the last temple, which is bordered with Thailand. And the Cambodian government, you know, complained, and then to the world authority of something. And then Thailand was forced to give this temple back. So what they do is the Thais sit down the bottom of this hill and shoot bullets up into the temple. So you're standing at the temple, all of a sudden you hear this thing whizzing around, and the first time I did it, I nearly pooped my pants, and I go, what is that? And he says, oh, you know, that's the Thai guys down there. They're shooting at the, you know, at the temple to discourage tourists. There is no tourist there. I'm the only guy with my guy there. And now I worked it out. I'm like, okay.
Did they say tourist or tourists?
Yeah, no, tourist.
See, I have plenty of good reason.
No, you don't. What could a bullet do to you? It could break your thing. And, you know, other worst case scenarios, you know, nothing major. Getting sick, you've got to be very careful of. But in Papua, because the hotel was one star, it had a bed, it had sort of a toilet, and because the tribes people didn't smell so good, and, you know, you're walking around in pig poo all the time, I didn't shower for 5 days. It was actually kind of cool.
Wow.
Smelt just as bad as them. And then when I got onto the plane, yeah, I got into trouble on the plane. Anyway, that's the story. But horror stories, you know, you will always have mishaps and things go wrong. You put them behind you and you just deal with it and move on. And basically, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, there's 95% of the trip was so good and you had such a good time that you can't wait to go back.
Yeah. Troy, what about you, man? Wedding horror stories here on the mainland.
You know, I've got amazing couples, so I never really have problems with my couples. I mean, we do a good job of vetting, you know, who hires us, and being referral only, we really don't get these crazy couples. But what does happen at weddings is brides are late. Mm. And oftentimes it's not their fault. Maybe it's hair and makeup. Most of the time it's hair and makeup or a limo driver, whatever. But when a bride shows up 2 hours late, it throws the whole day off because the wedding's going to start on time. The food's going to get served on time, but I've got to still take the photos that they expect. So that's my worst case scenario. That's my horror story, is I've been hired to get these images. And now what I used to have an hour with the girls, I now have no hour. Yeah. And I got to go photograph the guys. So I got to make stuff happen really fast.
Well, early in your career, have you had any horror stories where you know, like, oh man, I left the batteries at home or anything like that, where you personally weren't prepared for the wedding?
You know, maybe I've blocked them. I don't know. You know, I tend to be sort of a fanatic when it comes to preparation.
Yeah.
You know, I lost an order of film that I had sent to my lab back when I shot film, and Airborne lost my package. And that was a nightmare. We ended up finding it. They delivered it to the wrong building, but that was a horror story. We've dropped rolls of film. We used to shoot Hasselblad and we used to shoot 70mm film, and it was encased in this giant metal case, and we've dropped those and the sides have popped off. Luckily it didn't destroy the images, you know, things like that. I think that through preparedness and foresight, you're going to minimize, you know, those horror stories. I've had really drunk brides and really insane wedding parties, but none of that really affected me. It was things I pointed my camera at, so I was okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to add to that with Troy, the wedding that I went with Troy, towards the end of the day, he started getting really cranky and started yelling and cursing at me. And I'm trying to help him out and do all this stuff. And he started bitching me out. And I'm like, oh, okay, so this is a little bit different. Hey. But again, the stress is unbelievable because he's on a schedule. Yeah. And the schedule, you cannot go back and reshoot and redo. I mean, when he runs out of time, he's done. I can go back. If my images turn out crap one day, I can go back and see the villages the next day. But just as a note, every trip that I have taken over the last 30 years, something always goes wrong. Either a piece of equipment fails, a CF card, SD card breaks, something goes wrong with a lens, something goes wrong with a computer, something goes wrong. Everything, every trip, something goes wrong. And what you do is you just roll with it and, you know, have a workaround. And it's never so tragic that you can't, you know, take at least some because you've got backup.
Yeah.
So my attitude is don't sweat that. Okay, because something will always go wrong. Planes delayed, bags go to the wrong place. I mean, whatever. So long as you don't get injured to a point where you know, can't stand up.
Yeah. You're right. Peter, what of all the places that you visited, what would you say is the place that you have the fondest memories from, both either in terms of the fondest experiences from meeting the people there, or, you know, you made the best photos? What place sticks out in your head as, like, place?
Yeah. It's like when you have two or three kids. Someone says, which is your favorite kid? It's really difficult, right? I mean, the last trip to Papua, Singapore, Cambodia, Vietnam, Bhutan, those are sort of, and the Philippines, where the people are super friendly. They, you know, are happy to see you. They're not giving you a hard time. The food is phenomenal. Everything is cheap. You have no idea how cheap. It's so super cheap. And you come back with an experience that you go, well, these people are really super lovely. They're nice. We had a great time. And, you know, at least, you know, you've got great memories, and then you look at your photos. And hopefully every trip I go on, I try to improve or do something different and take things that I haven't done before and just to stretch it a little bit.
Yeah. Peter, has there been any place where you went to and you're like, you know what? Yeah, I could just stay here. I think I may just stay here for a while. I like this. Any places like that come to mind?
Okay. Not Papua, because they've got no TV and there's a lot of things missing there, no toilets. But yeah, no, Singapore, Bali, Indonesia, all through Indonesia, mm-hmm. you know, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, all of those places. But when you say live there, I mean, I could stay there for maybe 4, 5, 6 months, and then I'd have to come back because they don't have In-N-Out Burger there, man. It's like,
that's it. I mean, that's the power of In-N-Out Burger. You know, it's like, yeah. it will yeah. bring you back across the ocean because it's so
and
good.
And just as a quick note, did a last trip. We were 6 weeks away in China and with a couple American guys. And we went to the airport in Hong Kong and said, okay, let's get something to eat. And I said, oh, okay, let's go get some Chinese food. And all three guys said, are you kidding me? We're going to go get a pizza and a cheeseburger. That's the first thing we're going to eat. And they're vegetarians. That was funny. That was funny.
Troy Miller, it's hard to form that particular question and aim it at you. But is there a wedding that you've shot over the last decade or so that you and Margie both were like, you know what? That was the perfect experience. Everything from the first meeting through to the engagement shoot, through to the wedding, to the delivery of the photos, everything was just by the numbers, no problems at all. You have any experiences like that, or do they all have like a little
that
bit of
that does
a...
not exist. Just, you know, I'm just going to tell
you. It's a unicorn. That's a unicorn. Look out.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who's a wedding photographer at any level knows that doesn't happen. And oftentimes, you know, we schedule an hour. So we hope to get, you know, like 30 minutes. And if the day is going smooth, Margie and I'll be like, did we forget something? Like, we're done already. Like, what did we forget? Cause like, we're so usually just so panicked to get everything done. You know, there's always weddings that come to mind. And, you know, as we're talking, there is a wedding, Tim and Karen, who we photographed. I have an image that we call Stormy Kiss. And it was one of the most difficult days I've ever had to photograph in, because it was like 30 degrees. The rain was coming in at like a 20 degree angle all day long. I actually have video from the day. It was an amazing amount of rain. It was a Midwest type of rain. And I had known this couple for a little while, most amazing couple, and they were just so diligent in doing what I wanted. And we made the day work. And, you know, right immediately after the ceremony, I'm looking at my phone and I have a weather app and I'm like, it says it's going to stop raining in 2 minutes. Ceremony's over. They're starting to say their greetings. And I'm like, Tim, Karen, over to the fence now. And they're like, okay. And they run over there and the sun comes out and I get this amazing real world sunset that I just could never reproduce again. And that was spectacular. And the wrap up on that was the wedding that Peter went with me on. Karen was the coordinator, my bride, Karen. Oh. So that was super cool. You know how that all kind of came about. And that image was just, it's just an iconic image for me, that it's one of those pinnacle images where everything worked. I didn't think. I just shot. I knew exactly what I wanted. I'm changing lenses as we're walking over there in the rain. And it's it's just one. I'm sure there's more, you know, but that's definitely.
That's awesome. I want to end this particular segment with one question for you guys, but I want to remind the folks that are in the chat room that are watching live to go ahead and give this video a thumbs up. Thank you, Chris, for reminding me to say that. Give us a thumbs up so that this video gets noticed and interact in the chat. Give Chris something to do. Say something. Crack a joke or something.
I'm almost out of tea, Chris.
Well, you know what, Frederick? Yeah. You know, they need to do a thumbs up because Troy is probably one of the world's best wedding photographers on the planet. And I'm not just saying that because he paid me $40 the other day.
I love it. I love it. All right, guys. This last question I want to throw at both of you. Peter, you're in the hot seat first. You've traveled all over the world. You've met lots of people. You photographed them. If people haven't seen your images, I'm going to post links to all your stuff in the notes and the description for this video. But for the photographers that are coming up the road behind you and they want to kind of be where you are, learnings, psychological learnings about how to deal with people, how to have empathy, how do you break the ice with different cultures? If you could give one or two pieces of advice to your nephew photographers that are coming up behind you, what would you tell them in terms of how to deal with people that aren't necessarily like you?
I look people directly in the eye and smile and be warm and greeting and make them feel really comfortable. If your eyes are on the ground and twitching around, you know, like you're a crackhead tweaker, whatever you want to call it, that's not going to work. You need to look people straight in the eye and you need to address them and be nice and a warm handshake and a hug, no matter how bad they smell. Okay, obviously not the women, but the thing is, you've got to show that you're a nice person and then you mean them no harm and that you're a nice person to hang out with and they will do anything you ask.
Love it. Love it. So just for the record, Troy, Peter's sage life advice was don't act like a crackhead.
That's pretty damn good advice,
I guess. Troy, what about you, man? So people that are, you know, they want to follow in your footsteps. They want to be the world-class 27-year and counting wedding photographer. You've learned more than most people know about the art of wedding photographer and dealing with brides and grooms. What one or two pieces of advice would you give the photographers coming up behind you so they can get the shot without, you know, getting sweaty armpits and being nervous the whole day?
Prepare. That's a big one. Under promise and over deliver. I think a lot of times people think they're worth more than they are, and that's a really hard thing for any of us to do. But just be prepared to give a lot. And be confident. You know, when a client hires me, if they don't know me, their whole hope, everything that they do, they're like, I really hope this guy doesn't suck, right? Like their whole goal, I mean, they do all the research, they interview, they talk to everybody, and all of that is to find somebody that just doesn't suck. So if that's my goal, is to impress the heck out of them, right? And so I have to be educated and I have to be confident and I have to just really make them feel good, because then I can get the kind of images that I know I can create from them. And I always hold something back. Whenever we show teasers, whenever we're creating the album or whatever, we always wait to show them the best image when they're sitting in front of us or something, because it's always about making them feel special. And you know, Peter's suggestion about looking them in the eye, that's really important. It's really about showing that you're in control, they trust you, they're giving you a lot of money, and they feel safe with you.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're shooting weddings or you're photographing models, like what Team Ingle does, I mean, you can't futz around and be nervous, because they're going to be like, well, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah, who is this guy?
You know? Yeah. It doesn't work. You know, you've got to have that confidence as you go forward with them, and make sure whatever you've told them, you can deliver that and more, and your business will last forever.
Love it.
And Troy, you don't suck. Well, not all the time.
You're getting better.
You're getting better. A little bit of help, yeah, get all right.
All right, guys, coming up after this quick break, we're going to jump into the Picks of the Week segment. That's the segment where you guys get to recommend something to the This Week in Photo audience. It could be anything. But before that, we're going to take another break to say thank you to this week's sponsor. This episode of TWIP is brought to you by our friends at WPPI. Get your free $30 expo pass at WPPIExpo.com/TWIP. All right, it is time for our Picks of the Week segment. This is a segment where you guys get to recommend something to the This Week in Photo audience. Could be anything as long as it is photography related. Peter, I'm going to let you go first. And Troy Miller is always on this show. So I'm going to I'm gonna let you go first since you're the new kid on the block. What's your pick of the week?
Okay, my pick of the week, and I'll try and do it as quickly as possible, is this. I'm in the book printing, advertising, coffee table book business, and I'm 64. About 15 years ago, and it happens slowly, your eyesight, if you're over 35 years old, your eyesight's turn into crap as it goes. I don't care who you are, right? So I got my eyes checked, and then I found out that I needed cornea transplants, I needed cataracts done. So I scheduled the whole thing, got it done, and my eyes, I can see everything now, which is kind of scary. And I came back to work after the operations, and I'm looking at, you know, proofs and this and that, and I had my team there, and I started going off and scolding them and saying, who approved this? Who approved this? This looks so bad. It's got halos. And they all looked at me and said, you did before you got your eyes done. So what I'm saying is that, you know, keep good health, good mental attitude, but make sure you take care of your eyes no matter what it is. Do not skimp on your eyes. Get your eyes fixed, wear the right protective, wear the right glasses. Make sure they don't get dry, make sure they don't get scratchy, but look after your eyeballs because when you're taking photos, your eyes are everything.
Yeah, I love that. That is really sage advice. I mean, that's, you know, your eyes, your senses in general, right? And one little piggyback on your pick of the week is I'll put these glasses on your pick of the week. I got these. I now need glasses. I resisted forever and ever, but I know I need glasses, different kinds of glasses. So I was researching and I found this place. I think you guys have them in Southern California. This place called Jins, J-I-N-S.
They're in
malls in some places. Some places they're standalone. But they're kind of a new take on buying eyeglasses. They'll do the whole exam there, and then they have a floor full of different frames that you can pick out, and they actually create the glasses while you roam around the mall, and you come back and get the glasses, and then rock and roll. Unless it's like a really weird, thick prescription like Troy's, then you have to wait a couple of weeks. You got to wait a couple of weeks. No, but what'd you say? These glasses came from them. I walked in, I got them the same day, and I have another pair that are progressives that are coming in a couple of days that I had to order out to get. But
you picked the right glasses because it makes you look very attractive.
Thank you. Did you hear that?
Suck up. Jeez.
Wait, let me give you a full screen there. There you go. Right there. Just with that, you get the full screen. All right. Troy Miller, man, what's your pick of the week?
Well, I don't have anything great and philosophical like that. I mean, you know.
You feel one up?
Everybody should own a beanie. I'm just saying. But that's not my pick of the week. My pick of the week is Affinity Photo. Affinity. I have started to play with them a lot more. Even if you don't use them as a Photoshop replacement, which I may be doing, they're fantastic for HDR, photo stacking, focus stacking, panoramics, those type of things. So it's worth looking at. I think it's like $69. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those pieces of software that you don't realize that you wish you had until you get one. And then you're like, ooh, this thing's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. Affinity. Okay. I've seen you three times today. Yesterday, day before. You've never mentioned Affinity ever.
No,
so now all of a sudden it's a pick of a week. You've got Affinity pick of the week and you didn't even tell me?
No, I can't.
What the hell is that?
Use it. I don't have time for that.
He's got to have some secrets, Peter. Come on.
I've
been diving into that app, and diving in terms of playing with it, as well as, you know, binging on YouTube videos. And it, once you get past the, You know, what they say on the YouTube videos is like most of our brains are Photoshop wired. So Command T is transform and this is that. And, you know, you try to do those things and some of those things don't work. So it leads to immediate frustrations like this is crap. I can't even transform this thing, you know, and then you figure out how that app works. And it's like, OK, that might be kind of a better way to do it. Right.
Yeah.
So it is. It's actually really powerful. And I thought I was a victim of that whole price perception thing. Because I looked at it, like you said, Troy, it's like $69, $70 or something. And I bought it, and I'm looking at it like, it can't be that good. You know, Photoshop, come on. It's been around forever. They've got scientists working on Photoshop.
Yeah.
You're going to come up, bring up the rear, late entry to the party with a $70 app that's going to compete with Photoshop. No way. Clearly, there's a way because it is pretty good.
You own it forever.
And you own it forever. Yeah, there's no subscription. You own it forever. So I've been experimenting with a... an Affinity Photo Capture One workflow. You know, so doing the round trip out of doing the round trip out of Capture One 12 into Affinity Photo for retouching where necessary, and then bringing it back into Capture One. Which with a there's some settings in the preferences that you have to toggle on in order to make that happen, but it's possible. Yep. So very cool. Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
So very quickly, it's only taken you 57 minutes. And you didn't talk anything about gear, but now you're talking about gear. You can't help yourself.
Well, he made it the pick of the week.
It's the pick of the week. It's something different. Oh,
I can't control the picks. I can't, you know, I can't control the picks. Yeah,
okay.
You're right.
I forgive you. Whatever. That's fine.
All right. Let's dive in. I don't have a pick of it. I'm going to make my pick of the week, Jens, these glasses. And looking at Affinity Photo with these glasses. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's see. We got a couple of questions in and a couple of rhetorical comments in the listener Q&A section. Thank you, Christopher Berry, for putting these in here. The first one is up from Stephen Scharf, Twip Pro member. What's up, Stephen Scharf? Stephen has a motorcycle that we're talking about, by the way. Anyway, he says, Troy, how do you deal with a bridezilla? First, define bridezilla, Troy Miller, and then tell us how you, how do you put the fire out?
You diffuse it before it happens. I don't think I've ever had a bridezilla. I mean, I've never had anybody that was mad at me. I've seen them get very hyper and tense and stuff. And really what it takes is you have to calm them down. The wonderful thing is that I'm there by their choice. So I have a little bit of an advantage where they really want to be in a good mood in front of me. I've had brides that I've seen them turn to the right and just chew out a vendor and turn back to me and be a perfect angel because they really want me to get a good photo with them. So I have that advantage. But really, it's about diffusing the tension ahead of time, separating them from somebody. Sometimes I might have to go to the mom or the maid of honor and say, can you take her away? You know, take this person, this troubled person away. Like, can we need her by herself? So that's how I would deal with a tense subject, whether it's a bridezilla or a groom that's having a hard time planning or a hyper mom. It's like, let's get them away from each other. Let's just make this work. Because I do deal a lot with family tension. Mm-hmm. And there's people that just will not be in the same universe with each other. And you just got to get them apart.
I don't want to derail the conversation, but how do you deal with that? You know, the family tension, because it could be like, you know, that's Uncle Bob who my dad hates, the bride's dad hates because this and that happened way back in the past, but he had to be at the wedding. And then, you know, I'm not speaking to my brother. You know, how do you navigate that? Do you ask that at the pre-interview or what?
Yeah, we know ahead of time. So we have a Q&A that the bride and the couple fill out. So we know who the family is. And Margie is really good at interviewing the couple. So we know ahead of time going in. But ultimately, it's not me asking stepmom and stepdad to stand together. It's not me. It's what the bride wants. Mm. So if she says, well, I want mom and dad in the photo, and I go over to dad and he goes, you know, heck no, it's not me. I just have to say, okay. You know, and then what I do is I try to say, okay, we'll bring you in a minute. And then we photograph mom. And then, you know, I go to the bride and like, he doesn't want to be in the shot. Is that cool? And she'll be like, yeah, whatever. And they move on. So a lot of communication, you ask a lot of questions and you do it very quietly. I walk up to the couple and I'm like, hey, your dad doesn't really want to be here, or your sister's kind of mad, or, you know, Uncle Bill's a little drunk. So let's get him out of here. And they're like, yeah, whatever.
No, so again, back to communication, right?
A lot of communication and just really diffusing the tension. Luckily, my couples too, they're really focused on them. They're focused on the photos of them. Mm-hmm. So family, they just want to get the family into the reception and they want to go do the romantic scenic. So that kind of stuff happens really fast. So those tension moments don't last very long.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Frederick, so basically what we are, photo therapists.
I like that. Yeah. I'm stealing that. I got to register that. Photo therapist.
Yeah, photo therapist. You can use it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I may have to rename this episode that, photo therapy. next question is from Chris Berry. Chris says, when you are traveling to a new country, we know who this one's for.
Not Troy.
What are the first three things you do to prepare for the trip, Peter?
Okay, first three things. Okay, make sure if the country needs a visa, you've got a visa. Make sure you've got at least 6 months left on your passport. Mm. Make sure you have enough cash and make sure that the tickets that you have are all current and not standby. And if it's a dangerous place where there's, malaria and typhoid and things like that, that you be very careful not to drink the water and make sure you get enough, malaria tablets or typhoid or tetanus and all those other shots that you need. Just make sure you cover all the bases and then go and have a good time.
Jeez, I can see Troy is just over there. He's going, yep, that's why I ain't going nowhere. I don't have to.
If I need typhoid tablets, I'm not going there.
No, typhoid's a nice big needle in your ass.
No. See, I don't want to be inoculated so I can go take pictures somewhere. I'll go to Joshua Tree. I'm happy there.
You're in a location where there's lots of cool stuff to take pictures of. So you're okay Troy.
They have snakes in Joshua Tree.
Yes, they do.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. There's humans there too.
Yes!
All right. Ruth Happel is up next. She says, do you always have a spare camera? I assume for both travel and wedding, you don't want to have just one camera. Do you guys travel with backups wherever you go? Peter, you want to go first?
Yeah. I have four cameras that I always take. And this next trip, I'm taking five. I have two infrareds, three regular color, just in case. And then I take my phone as a major backup, just in case. But yeah, I've never had, out of 40 years of traveling, a camera fail. I've had things go wrong and things not work properly, but never fail. And I've never had anything stolen on any trip that I've ever been on. Awesome. But having a backup is always a good idea. Fantastic idea.
You ever had a memory card fail on you?
Never. Yeah. I take 2 terabytes of memory cards. And they're not gigantic ones. They're all 128s. They're all the fastest Sony 300, 299s. Even after falling off a boat into a river and getting pulled back out again, the SD card worked. It was fine.
What brand SD card was that?
That's Sony. They're all Sonys and Transcend and SanDisk. SanDisk, I use those.
Yeah.
I've never had anything fail. Never. Let me touch some wood.
I was going to say, knock on some wood. All right. What about you, Troy Miller? When you hit a wedding, you got your Micro Four Thirds camera and your Canon, right?
I have three complete sets to work with. So and for me, the way that I feel is that a backup is an actual backup. So if I have a D5, I've got an equivalent camera. So I've got a D850 or a D800 or a Z7. I've got 6 strobes. I've got multiple lenses. I could lose 2/3 of my gear and I could still keep shooting. I've had cameras go funky. I've had lenses stop focusing. I've had, I walk around corners and ripped strobes off the top of my camera. Mm. I've dropped a lot of things. I've broken lots of stuff. So it's nice to be able to walk around the corner and get a new one out of the bag. It hurts later, but I've got tons. And I've got tons of cards. I really only shoot weddings with cameras that have 2 card slots. And they mirror each other just for the sake that if I have a card fail, and I have had cards fail.
Wait a minute. That doesn't jibe with the Nikon mirrorless camera that you have.
No.
It has one card slot, right?
Yeah, and it's not a frontline camera. It's not my primary shooter on a wedding day. I use it for everything else, But on a wedding day, it's the D5 or the D850. So I know that I have that backup because I am never, ever, ever going to be the guy that tells the story where I lost the bride's images. It's not going to happen.
No,
so.
You don't want to be that guy.
No.
All right. Here's another question from Ruth for you, Peter. She says, yep. Peter, is there a country that you wouldn't travel to? If so, or if not, why or why not?
Probably the Middle East, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. Just problematic with, you know, getting shot or getting kidnapped.
Yeah.
Another place that I probably wouldn't go back, although I love going to Russia. There's so much tension in Russia. And the other thing that the Russians pissed me off on is their visa costs $650 US, and they ask for 15 pages or 10 pages, and that's just annoying to me. So that's just I don't want to go because they're annoying. But, you know, any country that's dangerous and, you know, you can get either kidnapped or killed is not on my bucket list.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And let me ratchet that down a little bit for Troy Miller. Troy, is there is there any state in the U.S. that you wouldn't
I mean, you know, Florida, maybe they have big bugs.
They do have big bugs.
I'm not a fan of big bugs. And I've been to Missouri. They have lots of humidity. That wasn't fun, but Miramac Caverns were fun. So, yeah, no, I'd go pretty much everywhere.
What about Cuba? Would you go to Cuba? That's part of America.
It's not.
It is. It's a little island off the bottom of Florida. Come on.
Yeah.
Let's do
it. You can make it happen, Troy. We're gonna have to set up a GoFundMe to get Troy out of the country.
No, money's not a problem. We can
I've
get
been
there.
Out of the country.
You haven't. You went
to
Hawaii.
I flew to Hawaii. I crossed international borders.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
I've been to Canada.
Okay, that kind of counts, even though, you know. They're just, they're connected, so kind of it doesn't count. All right, into the rhetorical comments here. So the first rhetorical comment is from Stephen Scharf. He says, my pick of the week is the Haida filter holders and filters. Excellent quality without the cost of Lee or Wine Country, available on Amazon. Yeah, have you guys heard of Haida filters? Do you use filters at all?
What's a filter?
I have dynamic range.
Oh, but neutral density, come on. That doesn't help, so.
You know what, Frederick? I have a filter on my cigarette holder. that's it. It's, when you're doing my kind of photography, you don't want any crap on the end of your photo camera gear. I mean, it gets dirty. It gets horrible. And then if I have a problem, I just send it over to Troy and he fixes it for me.
There you go. Yeah, Everybody needs a Troy.
Yeah, you got that right.
Steven has another rhetorical comment. He says, you have to show me how to get a layer mask to work. I can't see what I'm brushing with black and white in my masks. I'm assuming he's talking about Capture One, layer mask in Capture One. But you can do layer mask in Capture One and in Affinity Photo, right, Troy? So you'll have to record something inside of Intuit Pro for us so that we can.
Yeah, I did. You know, I just finished a little video for Capture One, so yeah. I'll get that out soon.
And Frederick, you know what? Steven should not be wearing a mask when he's doing that kind of work because it's really difficult to see when you're wearing a mask. That's what I heard.
This is why it's good that we're at the end of the show. Right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, Peter, let me throw it to you, man. Where would you like people to go to connect with you, see your work, and see some of the print stuff that you're working on? You do some amazing stuff. Like,
Thank you, sir.
Where you're sitting right now, I think, at the office, and... Yep. Yeah, there's some stuff in that office that people would not believe that you produced, like literally.
Well, just this year, I tried and I got into being an artist at the Pageant of the Masters at Laguna Beach, and that was a huge deal. 180 people tried and 5 of us got in. So all of a sudden, I have to get social media working for me. So now I have an Instagram page. I have a website that works.
Yeah.
I got all of that crap. I don't even know how to use any of that. But if you go to my Instagram or website or whatever, or you want to email me, I'd be happy to talk to anybody. I'm lonely.
He doesn't even know what it is, Frederick. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm lonely. So talk to me. I'm fine. I'm happy to talk to anybody.
That sounds like a cry for help. You hear that? I'm lonely. I'd be happy to talk to anybody. Wait a minute. Aren't you married, Peter? Come on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My wife hates me, but that's fine. That's fine.
She will after this.
She will. She will. I'm a dead man.
Troy Miller, what about you, man? Where should people go to connect with you?
Spicy Jello, Instagram. I have a YouTube channel now that I'm working on. My website, spicyjello.com. So
YouTube channel.
Yeah, I'll explain it to you later.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. In English, please.
It's magic. It's magic. Well, it's I want to thank both of you guys for coming on. You guys have been fantastic. I knew this show was going to go exactly like this, so this is exactly why I wanted to do it. So this is fantastic. And look, as
anybody that knows me, I mean, I have a really bad potty mouth most of the time. It's been a struggle for me not to swear for 1 hour. So yes. I'm going to go out and have a cigarette now and swear a lot.
Yes, Peter has, you talk about filter, Stephen Sharp, Peter has no filter. So
I lost mine. I don't know what happened.
Unfiltered camel. That's what he is. Yeah.
Right. Oh, camel? Camel?
Exactly. That's right. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thank you both for coming on. And I want to thank all the folks in the chat room for participating in this episode of This Week in Photo, The Psychology of Photography. Thank you for the thumbs up and the likes and all that good stuff. If you want to keep up with This Week in Photo, obviously you can head over to thisweekinphoto.com. That's where all roads that are This Week in Photo are related. You can subscribe to us at thisweekinphoto.com/subscribe, or of course on our YouTube channel, where you are probably watching this if you're watching the show, and you can subscribe to us there. So please give us a thumbs up in all those places. Make sure you you're connected to us. And our podcast is available pretty much everywhere. We're on Google Play, obviously on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. We're on Pandora, on and on and on. So wherever fine podcasts are found, you will find This Week in Photo. And with that, it is time to take that lens cap off. This is Twitter.